Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Liv Kennedy, and I am joined today by...
Jeremy Cox. The way you went into that... By why?
Why?
You are secretly from New York. Even New Yorkers don't pronounce it that way.
I would love that. If I tried to do a New York accent, I wouldn't be able to do it. So, like, yeah, that works out well.
I will say I have observed that non-rhotic American accents seem to be the easiest for most non-rhotic English speakers to imitate.
Yeah, like a southern drawl. Like, that's like, that's kind of like quite close.
But like a non-rhotic southern. So, like, aristocratic, sipping peach tea.
Right, sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Who are you?
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
No!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
About to get into something real big now.
I'm Jeremy Cobb, but Jessica Petra calls me JJ Cobblestones McGalloway.
Ooh.
Yeah, which I think is a reference to something in Philadelphia. Also, I just want to apologize. Literally, as we began recording, someone fired up a lawnmower directly outside of my house.
We don't hear it.
Yeah, no, cannot hear it.
I hope it's not on the recording, because I can very much hear it.
The Shure mics, they are good, and they cut out a lot of background noise, so that's good.
I mean, I have faith.
I've got a dishwasher going. Like, you know, we're all up to our bits and bobs. But you might have noticed, Jeremy, we just heard an additional voice just then. Oh, my goodness.
It's true. There's another person in the call.
Another person? Oh, my goodness. Who could it be? Oh, my God. There they are again. Ah. Who is it, Jeremy?
I'm a halfling IRL. Actually, I don't know what constitutes halflings IRL, but I'm very short. I don't know why people always think online that I'm, like, really tall. I must, like, hold myself as, like, a tall person, and they meet me, and they're like, you are a midget.
Yeah, like, that's good.
But my mom is 4'11", so I'm taller than her.
Okay.
So I could be shorter.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
But I am Margaret Crone. I do lots of things on the internet, most probably well-known for game development. Mm-hmm. And I do love me a lot of tabletop RPGs.
Well, you're in the right place. Hell yeah.
And we're happy to have you here. You're also, many of our fans will have heard your voice already on Big Trouble in Little Manus as Jenna Ainsley.
Yeah. I'm not normally that monotone or dark. I'm a very sunshine and rainbows person, but that character is... she thinks about the world in a very different way, and she has an awesome spider buddy, which it was a lot of fun to play.
Cute.
Yeah, good old Clyde.
Yeah.
Did I send you the picture of when I was,
Yeah, you were reminded. You were like, oh, this made me think of Clyde. I was like, oh.
Yeah. They had the same species of spider that Clive is at the zoo. Good times.
It's such a cool species of spider, too. It's like...
Is it like a jumping guy, or is it different?
No, he was a tarantula. I think a Mexican red knee.
Ooh, a rancho. Okay.
Yeah, they have like red stripes on them, which look really cool, and they're fuzzy.
Yeah.
Fuzzy. And I think as far as spiders go, I think my understanding is that they make some of the best pets.
Because
they're more like docile and generally chill. But
just
I could
chill guys.
She walked Clyde on the leash outside.
It's true.
Aww.
And eventually Clyde gains telepathic abilities.
And oh,
so
gosh.
Begins talking.
What does he sound like?
I think he has a deep voice. I think he speaks in a rather authoritative, yet still relatively friendly tone.
It's warm.
Yeah. And for the character, my inspiration was very much Wednesday Adams. Like,
yes.
I loved, and Daria, like a combination of those two characters was kind of like the vibe I was going for. So hopefully that came across. Enjoyed Jenna.
Margaret, we're not just here to talk about Big Trouble in Little Manus, as wonderful as it was. We're here to talk about you in particular. Yeah. Maggie, can you please give us your nerdy origin story? How did you get into this nerd business?
Well, I kind of grew up in a not great setting. Didn't really have a good childhood, but one of my big escapes were, well, two of my big escapes. One was my father worked in a like computer shop at one point, and I would just kind of explore and take things apart and put things together. And that kind of grew my like techno brain, I guess. And that's kind of how I got into like MUDs and DOS games and things of that sort for video oriented games. It was more like text games because we were, you would be like, turn left, turn right, you know?
Can you explain what a MUD is?
You were just a little dot moving around.
What a
MUD
is for a lot of people? Because I think I knew because I just recently watched a video on them, but I feel like for a lot of people, MUDs may be from before their awareness of all of that kind of thing.
I don't really know how to explain it either. I just know that's kind of what they describe them as. It's like text-based gaming, I guess, is the best way to describe it from my perspective.
Is it like when you, like, you literally, like, type in, like, an action, see if it works kind of thing?
Yeah, and you'd be, like, a little plus sign, and you'd be it'd be, like, it'd move you forward, you know, and then left, and then right. It's very interesting. And obviously things got more... I'm old. I may not look old, but so things have progressed from there. Obviously, we have like 3D models and stuff. And I think that's why, you know, I've always really enjoyed that type of game. And then the other side of it was like dungeon crawl and playing like those type of tabletop games with my cousins and some of the kids at church. Because that was kind of my other escape was I would just never go home. I would just try to find ways to not go home. So that was either, you know, going with church groups or library, things like that. And I found a lot of nerdy people in those spaces. And I got to play a lot of tabletop games. And I love stories and reading and character creation and world building. And, you know, I think that one of the things is when you our child having a lot of problems, sometimes it's like that escapism for you that is almost like a therapy. So for me, I think analyzing myself post, you know, I'm not a little kid anymore, but I think that that's really what helped me through a lot of that stuff was just getting my mind in a different space than where I was.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really nice to hear that you had like a positive like church experience as well. Like, what did you do at church? Was it just like you met people just as you went, or was it like a church group kind of thing?
Well, what's really funny is it wasn't even the church that I was going to. It was a neighborhood friend who had an after church like event thing, and they would like watch SpongeBob or play music together or play basketball. Like it was just be different stuff all the time. Yeah. And then there were just tons of kids that were there and they would just hang out after school. It was like babysitting for their parents, basically. I'm sure there was probably some cost to it or something, but I feel like they kind of just like let me tag along and didn't really say anything. But I think a lot of people knew what my situation was, at least the adults did. And there wasn't really much I could do because CPS did not help us. So it was the system did not help me in that realm. But I know it has helped some other folks. Not me, though. And a lot of other adults helped and took that space. Sorry, it got deep today. So
no, it's okay. I just want to say
I'm about
like,
to cry. I was like, ooh, oh, no. I'm going to nip that.
Yeah. No, I'm so... I know it doesn't mean much for me. Said like we met today, but I'm just like I'm really sorry to hear that happened to you. Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad that like you had a bit of a escapism through RPGs and your friends and good adults who are around. Yeah. That's really good to hear.
Yeah, I think people thought I was really weird when I was a kid, but now people watch me on the internet.
Yeah,
it's a totally different thing. Mm-hmm. And people think it's cool that I can, you know, really get into a character and play mm-hmm. that character. So I think that that has been a lot of fun, and I really, really enjoy that a lot. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're talking about accents and characters. I love creating accents and mm-hmm. playing different characters and kind of changing it up every time I do something.
How many accents can you do for like an RPG character or in general? I have literally like three. I have as my go-to. It's either,
I feel like I could do hundreds. I've done like so many different characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you think of a character that you've played maybe like in a Roll For It production that had a particular accent that you enjoyed doing?
Like my favorite?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's a variety. Like right now I'm playing Emmy, who's really fun in it's Pod by Night, but Roll For It is the original channel that was playing it, and then we host all the YouTube videos for that. Mm-hmm. And Emmy's really fun to play. She's like a little child vampire that's super evil.
Oh gosh.
Which is fun to play.
Is that this like then, Interview with a Vampire vibes, like that kind of child?
Yeah, creepy. Mm-hmm. It's
do you want to come play with me?
Oh, that's great. I love
too
that
real.
I immediately love it. It's so cool.
Okay, Jeremy, we'll have a lot of fun.
I ever told you this, but I got to play Vampire the Masquerade. I got to guest on Titties by Night, and played an old man vampire his name was Morian, and all he did was reminisce about other vampires, famous vampires that he had met. So his vibe was entirely like, Yes, of course. I met Dracula. He's a jerk, let me tell you. They all think he's hot now. No.
I think playing like the posh characters are fun too, because we did this show called Eaton Grange, and that was a lot of fun to play. And it was, you know, it's all drama and just very much, I was trying to remember the name of the game that we were playing. I always forget it. But it's like Anne of Green Gables style, or what is it called? Oh. Jane Austen.
Oh, okay. Is it Good Society?
Yeah, Good Society. There we go.
I love Good Society.
But it's the upstairs, downstairs one where you play like the servants, and then you also play the people who live there. So you have two different characters that you're playing, and it was so fun.
I love that.
Those are always good times. Mm.
Yeah.
And get to put my British accent on.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Can I ask to hear your British accent? I would love to hear it, if that's okay.
I don't know. What do you want me to say?
Hello, it's me. I'm part of aristocracy. I don't know. Silly.
But yeah, I don't know. I just have fun playing the different characters and voices and kind of toying with characters. It's like finding the right voice for the character that you have, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, Maggie, you mentioned that you had been like really into MUDs and other similar things like that. When I first learned about MUDs, it was in the context of the development of the game EverQuest, the MMORPG, which
worked on EverQuest and also played a lot of EverQuest.
Oh, there you go. Well, yeah, that's my question is, how did doing those things for fun then turn into you doing those things professionally?
Ooh, that my origin of my profession.
Yes.
So how it really, the big alteration for me or change was when I started playing Vanguard Saga of Heroes. I got really competitive in that game and ended up winning some championships, and they were looking for class leads for classes, and I was playing a Blood Mage at the time, which was actually one of the classes that people were like, oh, it's not very good, it's underpowered. But for some reason, I was like always the top healer in the, you know, every time. And even in DPS, I was able to like wreck some fools because I think people weren't using the class properly and I was. And then actually the company gave other guilds my rotation, which I felt was like kind of rude because it's like, hey, that's like giving a guild secrets away. Is like, oh, I'm going to give them because other people were saying there's no way. And they thought I was cheating or hacking or something like that. Oh. And the developers were like, no, she's just using the class how it's meant to be played.
Hmm. What is a rotation in this context?
A rotation? so I wouldn't say that's a perfect rotation for every class, but depending on what you're doing, there may be like the best way to get the most healing or the best way to do the most damage or the best way to tank. So you have like a slew of abilities and you'll try to utilize those in a specific order in order to exploit that.
Gotcha.
But not exploit in like a negative terminology, exploit in a good way.
Yeah. Like optimization.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
To take the advantage of it, I guess.
So basically,
is the best
you
way.
Were the best person at this particular Blood Mage class.
Yeah.
At the time.
To say something like that, but and I won a bunch of competitions and things, and then I kind of got started. People started knowing who I was in the community. A lot of people knew my name before from other games that I played in because they'd be like, "Are you the Loperza from this game?" So like. Because I've always played in a lot of like the top guilds and like I'm just a competitive person. When I do something, I want to do it 100%. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
I give it my all. Mm-hmm. The thing that really changed things for me was that because of that, people started talking about me and there was this podcast that was looking for a host or a co-host. And they had reached out to me and I was like, I've never done anything like that before. I'm not sure if that's, and I go back and I listen to things that I've been in previously and you're just like, oh, what is I doing? I would laugh all the time. Mm-hmm. It was really funny. I don't know. I think I just uncomfortable laugh. Like if something is uncomfortable, if I'm not sure what to do, I'm just like, hey.
Yeah, it's like a fallback thing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just like, I just start giggling. Mm-hmm. And I would say a lot or, you know, things things that you don't realize that you're doing until afterwards. But hopefully I speak better now.
Yeah,
who knows, maybe not. And so I started doing that podcast and the podcast got pretty big. It was originally for Vanguard Saga of Heroes, but we started delving into just talking about like design in general and the concepts of those things and how they applied. Well, at least I did. And then my co-host talked about stuff from their perspective. Hmm. But we got pretty big in the sense that like we had a lot of people watching us and viewing us, or like listening to us. And we started getting sponsors. And then we started going to events. And one of the events that we got invited to was what was then called Fanfare at the time. And while we were there, the developers were like, hey, we listen to your podcast. And you have like a really good designer mindset. Have you ever thought about being a game designer? And I was like, ooh, every kid who loves video games or any type of game has thought, I want to make a game. So yeah, of course I had thought about that, but I didn't think it was something that was an option for me. At the time I was going to college, I was pretty far along in my college degree. I was going to school for healthcare administration and music theory. I really thought I would be helping, you know, kids through the hospital with music because I thought that would be something that I could bring to the table that's different. I finished my degree, but I don't use it because I'm in, you know, that's the story. Basically, they had noted that there was going to be some CS and QA positions that open up and then they do apprenticeships. And so I applied for a QA position, got it. And then when the apprenticeships opened up, I applied for those and I got one. And
wow.
I became a game designer. And so that's kind of how I transitioned from, I don't know, playing games to working professionally in the space.
Would you kind of recommend that as a way to get into game design if people are kind of listening and they're like, ooh, that's something I'm interested in?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more avenues now to get into game development. You can actually just become a game developer. You can just make games yourself. And oftentimes, they will tell you to do that. I would say if you want to work your way up, and it is a long journey to work your way up, you can start in QA or CS or community or something of that sort, and then try to transition in a company if that company allows for that type of growth. Some companies mm-hmm. don't. The other side of it is going to school. There are lots of mm-hmm. educational options now that were not available when I was going to school. And then the alternative is screw all of that and just make yourself, make a game, learn. You know, if you're somebody who's a kinetic mm-hmm. learner who can just look at something and do it and learn from a YouTube video or whatever, there's so many resources out there now, whether you want to mm-hmm. use Unity, Unreal, or some other type of base for your gaming, for your, you know, game engine. It just mm-hmm. depends on the type of game that you're trying to create. Mm-hmm. I would recommend working on something small first as mm-hmm. your first project, yep. whether that's just like a point and click game, because those games are really fun and they can be very enjoyable. There's a lot of point and click games that I really enjoy that tell great stories. So I think that you can definitely create amazing games through that. Mm-hmm. And game jams. There's so many places that you can go be part of a game jam, and you don't even need to really know what you're doing. But there's a lot of other people there that will help guide you too. And then you're not alone trying to create something. You have like a team. And you can also try different things when you do game jams. Like one time you can be doing coding. One time you can do writing. One time you can do implementation of data. So you can kind of try different stuff, and it can be kind of fun.
Yeah. I want to jump in on you saying like try and make something simple for the first time. I have recently been streaming myself playing Disco Elysium, and I finally got Liv and Jasper to try it.
We did it, folks.
Yeah. And they liked it.
I've got it now. I play it on my Steam Deck. It's great.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. Well, that was that studio's very first game. And I don't think any of them had ever, like any of the core people at that studio had ever made a video game before. And there's like a lot of behind the scenes mess in the aftermath of that game. But one thing that did emerge was that they were all like shells of their former selves by the time they finished that game. Margaret, if you're not familiar with it, they're are, I believe, over a million words in the game, like a million words of text in the game. It's a text-based CRPG. It's less than, it's like 30 to 40 hours long, probably 30, 40, 45 hours. But the level of detail in the writing mm-hmm. and the sheer number of options, as well as the innovation that they bring to just general RPG mechanics and how your skills work in the game, especially like with the thought cabinet and stuff like that, is mm-hmm. like people are always like, are already, it came out in 2019 and people are already like, it's one of the greatest games ever made. But the studio is like finished. It's not that the difficulty of making the game is not the only reason that it's finished, but it is part of it.
It's not easy. You know, I think a lot of people think that, oh, I want to make a game. And then they go for it and they don't realize that, oh, it's work.
It's a lot.
Especially if you have a really, you know, if your aspirations of the game are quite large. If you think of something small and simple, then it, you know, you can create something and go from start to finish a little bit easier. But, you know, I work on MMORPGs, so that is no simple task. There are many systems, many features, a lot of, you know, text and lore and character creation and world creation and things of that sort. So it is not an easy feat. It takes time. Some of these games take 5 to 10 years to 20 years just to create. So it's not something that you can just blink and then create. You can definitely come up with concepts in your mind, but when you try to put those into action, sometimes they are not as good as you thought they were going to be.
Mm-hmm. Back to the drawing board, absolutely. I will say that there is one MMORPG that you're currently working on, right? Which is Ashes of Creation. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so Ashes of Creation is a world that's a little bit different in the sense that we really want a persistent world. So, you know, if Jeremy starts playing it today, it won't be the same world that when Liv joins later, you know, it is, because it's going to change and evolve. And really the goal is to make it not dynamic in the sense of what people think of dynamic, but like that it grows and changes. So you start a city as like a wilderness and it grows up to a metropolis. And there can only be a certain amount of metropolises in the world. So there's going to be some sieges and wars that happen in order to tear things down and bring things up. And you kind of have this ebb and flow of a world that changes. And every server will be different because, you know, there's different cultures on those servers based on guilds and just people that are playing and how they play and the strategies in which they play and the economy of that server. So I think it's going to be really exciting. If you're an MMO fan, you enjoy that type of play, it is on that level, on like a competitive level though, because there's a lot of systems in place that are, you know, PvP or economically or community driven. And I think that that's really exciting. Kind of, you can play a solo, but it's, you know, in the end, the grand scheme of the product is not meant to be, you know, it is definitely a community thing. And although you may be one person, the actions of everybody are going to alter and change the world.
Right. I mean, it's in the title, even the idea of creation. Like, I think really large scale creation has to be done by communities, has to be done by groups rather than just individuals. So that tying in with like the play style really makes a lot of sense. Can you give us like any details about even ideas about like the actual like lore of the game?
The basis of what's happening is that there was a time where these folks lived on Avera and something of an apocalypse basically happened and they had to leave the planet. So they moved to they went to this place called Sanctus. And that's kind of where they've been for a long time. Sanctus has no magic. It is very, you know, it's like basically they went back in time because they went from a world that's full of magic and they're able to do things that they wouldn't be able to do to a place where it's like everything's manual and you have to redo things. You have to create tools, right? Mm-hmm. And now these portals have started opening up back to Vera. Mm-hmm. And they're going back in and exploring and, you know, trying to create the world again. Mm-hmm. But there's dangers.
Very cool. Yes, a very intriguing premise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there are some people who didn't go through the portal, who lived on Vera through the apocalypse. They went underground and they're called the Tulnar. So they're kind of not human anymore. They're like beast plus human. So they're very, you know. Mm. Bestial people, I guess is the best way to put it.
<That's>
like
very cool.
Gorilla people or like lizard people or things like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm really curious just because I know so little about game development. Can you give us an idea of like maybe what a typical day for a game developer might be? Because when I hear game design and game development, I'm like, I'm not sure whether that is specifically referring to like writing or if there's coding involved or if it's like art or if it's all of those things mixed together. Can you give us a little bit of an idea of what tends to go into that process as like a game developer?
There's so much. I think that I would be here all day if I tried to explain the average day of a game developer because everyone's day is different depending on what you're doing at the studio. I don't want to go into that because that's a lot. Gotcha. But there are a variety of different departments that you can be in, whether that's, you know, a service department, which is like customer service or community or QA or, you know, I would even consider VFX and UI sometimes services because they are serving like their customer is the developer. And then there's engineering and art, and within engineering and art, there's so many different things that you can do. I think that like everybody's day is quite different. So it would be hard for me to give you a day in the life of a developer. Mm-hmm. I could give you a day in life of a very specific developer, but I think for perspective of like how something gets implemented, so you can kind of understand like a simple pipeline. Let's say you're creating a creature, right? There are so many things that go into a creature. First, it is like the design of that creature, right? And sometimes that is a narrative designer, or sometimes it is a combat designer or a world designer that's designing those things, depending on the use of that creature. And they're creating like the ecology. What is that creature's purpose? How do they eat? How do they live? What do they look like, right? And then they're giving that to a concept artist. Concept artist is creating the concept for it. They decide, okay, this is the direction we want to go. And then you have a modeler who's creating the model. Sometimes the same person who's modeling will also rig it and animate it and weight rig and weight it and animate it. And sometimes those are different people that are rigging, weighting, and animating. And sometimes it's, you know, three different people, four different people, or sometimes one person does it all because they're talented badass. and sometimes the person that's modeling it is even the person rigging it and animating. And so it depends on the studio. Some studios are small and you wear many hats. Some studios are like, you do your job and then you pass it on down the assembly line. But once it is, you know, created and has its animations, and those animations are sometimes really worked together with the designers because they're the ones who are going to implement it and utilize it. So they'll be like, oh, this creature is going to have a breath weapon and I need it to look like this. And they need to be able to have like, when they get hit, what that looks like. And when they attack, maybe they have a couple of claw attacks or something like that. So you're kind of really designing what the creature does and how it acts. And then oftentimes you'll have visual effects that are added onto that. So if it did have a breath weapon, maybe there's some visual effects on it. Maybe its eyes glow. Maybe it has little spores on its body that like pop every once in a while. And you have those added onto it. And then when it gets implemented, that's a whole other side of things. So you have like this technology that an engineer has probably created that a designer then utilizes. So a designer says, hey, I need an ability system and a AI system that will allow creatures to do X, Y, and Z. Some people don't have tools and you are literally scripting this yourself as a designer. But oftentimes in these big companies, or at least in MMO companies that I've been at, they have tools that are created by an engineer. And then the engineer is linking that stuff on the back end. And then as a designer, you're implementing the data. You're saying, hey, this creature is going to do this attack in this order. They do this amount of damage. And then you're playing with it and balancing it. And it's kind of like the funnel. And that's a lot of pieces just for one thing, you know?
Yeah. Like one individual creature.
Even that creature, there's pathing data that has to be created in the world so that these creatures can path.
Games do take a long while to be developed because there's a lot of effort that goes into it. And you can also tell like through the way you're speaking about it that you're really passionate about it and really excited about it. So that's really cool to hear.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, because my impression of the games industry is that it is generally very white and very male. And as a woman of color, I'm curious what your experience has been in that industry. Has that really been a factor for you at all? Or has it just been like, nah, it's pretty much the same?
It has, I will say, it has changed and progressed over the years. I've been in the industry for almost 20 years. I definitely see change. But I will still say that there are a lot more males than females. And I think it depends on the team that you're on, whether there's, what culture people are come from. So kind of, it's hard, but I would say that it is, at least in the US, I think that there are a lot more white males in the game industry from my personal experience that I have experienced, especially when it comes to leadership, it has been what I've seen. For instance, like I am one of two women who are in our leadership team of all the men there. So I think that I used to be the only one of that type, you know? Yeah, so I think that when I first started in the industry, there were like, for me, there were like two QA women and everyone else was male. And then, when I went into game design, it was very, very much like often I was the only female on my team. But it depended on the team. So for Free Realms, there were a lot of women who were on my team, which was really cool, which was a cool experience for me for my first game design experience. But then as I changed and moved to different teams, that became less of a factor there, but, it kind of depends, what department you're in and what types of things you're doing, which I think is also sad because, as someone who's a leader now, I try to hire people, but I'm always hiring whoever the best candidate is, but sometimes I just don't get a lot of female candidates who are qualified. Yeah. And it is unfortunate. Or I don't get a lot of people of color who are qualified. Mm. So it's not always a case of like, you have control over that. Even if you're trying really hard to go into the spaces to diversify.
Yeah.
It is definitely a challenge to get a lot of different types of people into a company and to bring those people together. Cause it is good to have that perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do think there still are issues. I have a very unfortunate situation that happened to me regarding being a female in the industry. And I didn't really see that as what was happening at the time. But I was a game designer at a company, and basically they forced me into a community position. And yes, I was great at that position, but that wasn't what I was passionate about. I really enjoyed the development that I was doing and the designing that I was doing. And I was a good game designer. And what kind of conspired was that every time I would present a design or a system, I would just get like, they would be like, no, this is bad. And it would always get declined. And one of my coworkers was like, man, what is happening? All of these systems are so cool. And like that weapon that you created was really cool. I don't understand why. And I was like, oh, they said it was too RPG-like. So that's why that specific weapon didn't get approved, or like this was wrong with this system. So I like thought I was doing something wrong. I took the feedback because I take criticism and I assess that. And I didn't think about it as like someone was judging me, you know, because that wasn't my first thought, was like, oh, someone's being sexist towards me. Like that wasn't what ever was on my mind. But my other coworker just was like, he felt it in his soul that something was wrong. And he was the one who brought it to my attention. And he said, next time you design a system, let me present the system.
Yes. Oh, what an ally.
Which was probably a bad call, but I let him do it. And he presented it. And it was like the craziest experience I've ever had.
Wow.
They were like, this is the best document. It's so well written. The UI mock-ups were great. And then the user stories that were added on here were fantastic. This is a great system. This is what everyone should be striving to do.
Wow. Oh my God. What was the reveal like? Because I would be like, well,
it was rough. So when he was like, oh, well, I want to be clear. I was presenting it, but Margaret was the one who actually designed this. So yeah, I would agree that this was a great document and we should utilize this, you know, template. And then everything just went quiet. And I felt like my soul coming out of my soul. I was like, I am not here anymore. I can like feel it right now, just shaking. So yeah, I got a pip and written up for it.
Whoa, and then dude.
I was not aware of where that happened to me. And yeah, apparently it happened and I didn't improve. And so I was kicked off the team.
Dude. Wow. Okay.
And what's weird is that was never like the narrative that was driven. They were like, oh, Margaret wanted to move to community. Margaret wanted to do this. And then so I would tell when people were like, oh, we haven't seen you in a while. We saw you doing all the community stuff. That's really cool that we could tell that you're that's really what you wanted to do. And I was like, no.
Was it? No. Yeah. I think it's like when they want to move you elsewhere. I feel like it's like they're trying to get you out of a situation without like firing you, because it is illegal to fire someone based around that, you know? So,
well, they told me I had 24 hours to decide if I wanted to move to the community team or leave the company. Yeah.
That's so illegal.
And if I knew my worth, I would have just left, and I probably could have worked at Blizzard or somewhere else. You know, I could have moved somewhere. I could have Bethesda. I could have worked for another company that would have gladly taken me. I had plenty of years of experience.
Yeah.
I knew what I was doing. I could do every element of development on the design side, like whether it was like level design, implementation, systems creation, combat. Like I literally could have done any of those things. So dungeon creation, like I just didn't have faith in myself in that same sense. So it was rough. And then also my boyfriend was working at the same company, and so it was like just easier if we just stayed there. And so I just tried to
On the subject of Blizzard, though, did you see that recent Twitter thread that a former employee posted of his time at Blizzard?
I have not. Okay. I've heard some bad stories, but
yeah. It was, I'll try and summarize it very, very quickly, but essentially he was offered a promotion. And
oh, that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was like, okay, cool. This is a promotion. Yeah. It comes with a pay increase. Okay. Awesome. They're like, yeah, look, if you just accept the job by this Friday, we'll get the exact terms of it to you. And he's like, okay, he accepted the job. Oh, sorry. They're not ready on Friday. We'll get them to you. We'll get them to you turned into wait until August. We'll get them to you in August. That's when all the promotions, everything kind of go through.
This is so why you don't do a job until it's written in stone. Yeah. So you get the title.
And right after he got promoted, he was basically forced to fire one of the people working under him. And then right after that, because they didn't hire anybody to replace that person's job. So he was now having to do his new job plus his old job plus that person's job. Then they chose
that happens all the time.
Yeah. Wow. And then they chose to hire, they chose
you know, anytime there's layoffs or people get let go, often the team has to then take on that work. And it is so hard to get a headcount to pull that back. And it is rough on folks.
Yeah, because he ended up, by the end of it, he was doing the jobs of four different people. And because he was UK-based, they were paying him less. They were paying him, I think, it was something like, he was getting paid less than everybody who was under him. And like significantly less than the industry standard for his position. Because I think it was like, because specifically he was international, they were like,
it was probably cost of living. Some companies do it based on like cost of living. So if you are remote, they will pay you based on the area that you work, that you live in versus like the average cost, you know, average pay for that job.
And it culminated with him finally being like, hey, it's, you've been now pushed back the raise and everything to September. I think it was actually maybe in October even. And he was like, look, either you give this to me now or I stop doing my job. And then HR swoops in and is like, what is this you're saying about promotion though? What are you saying? And he's like, what? And he's like, well, this isn't a promotion. Leadership is a lateral move. And he's just like, what? And and they basically were like, he was like, well, then I don't want to work here anymore. And they're like, okay, well, because you have been given this position, we have determined that you have been privileged to information that is too important now. So we are going to leverage the non-compete aspect of your non-compete clause of your contract. And you're not allowed to work literally anywhere for the next 2 months. And so it was like, he couldn't get a job at like a restaurant.
But there's a cat now in Margaret's feed, and I'm like, ooh, I'm just smiling.
She's like, emotional support.
Yeah.
An emotional support feline. But I just remember reading that, and that sounds, obviously I've never been involved in game design, but I have had glimpses into the corporate world, and it did sound, unfortunately, aspects of it sounded unfortunately par for the course for a lot of corporate stuff. I'm curious, is that kind of, because what you just described, the reason I thought of it is because of what you just described, the situation that you faced, where they're like, there's weird company politics, they're mistreating their employees, they're doing stuff that is basically illegal, but they're doing it in such a way that there's very little recourse that you have short of just leaving the company.
I do think there are not great progression paths for developers. I've worked at a lot of companies that take advantage of people and use them for as much time and keep them in these low paying positions for as much as time as possible, through processes, you know, the annual and mid-year reviews and things like that. I worked at a place one time where I was like, you know, give me the list of things I need to do to get to the next stage of my job, right? If I want to become a mid-level and move to senior, what are my steps? And it was like pulling teeth to get that information. And I feel like that's at a lot of companies, and I'm sure a lot of people, it might not even just be game development specific. It's probably across the board. I feel like there's a lot of people in leadership positions who are not looking out for the people. And for me, being in that position now, I want progression paths for my people. I want them to know what the next steps are and how to get that. And I think that it is not a great look. And I think there's a lot of companies that are doing that, and it is rough. And I have worked at many of them. And you know, you'll be doing three or four people's jobs and you're like, what more do you want me to do to get to the next stage of my career? And it is very, very sad.
Yeah, no, that's something that hits way too close to home, unfortunately. Like, I mean, I've worked in a bunch of different industries, like marketing industry, digital marketing in particular, even like working in like the service industry. There was just like a weird kind of like, I don't know if it's based around like the fact that I am a woman or anything like that, but just like there was always a ceiling that I would hit. And it was just like, well, you know, why would we, you know, give you any more for the extra effort that you're putting in? Is like, you know, what are we doing here? What's happening?
Service industry is crazy too, because I worked in college as a like a server and as a waitress, and they're paying you like $2.40 an hour because they're like tips. You're going to make your money off of tips, so we can pay you this like ridiculously small amount of money.
And I've never like, understood that how? In America. Like what that just seems devastatingly illegal to me, but like it's just a thing that happens. Like
I'm curious why, like, because you mentioned that every time there's a round of layoffs, that what you end up with is people having to do like cover all, they're basically like the little every just a team of little Dutch boys charging in, sticking every appendage they have into the dam. Why, and obviously over the past couple of months, multiple game companies, both TTRPG and video games, have seen huge numbers of layoffs. Why? I guess my question is, do you have any idea why these layoffs tend to come about? And then why is the system in such a way that like it puts the employees in this position?
Money.
Yeah. You will see oftentimes that layoffs start happening around, you know, November, December, all the way leading up to like February. Because they are looking at their budgets, they're looking at their plans for the next year, and they're like, hey, we have to cut some costs here to ensure that like we are creating profit, right? And so a lot of times that means cutting people. They're like, where's the fat? Let's cut it off. But I think that the problem is that a lot of people in leadership positions who get to make the judgment call of where to cut the fat are not aware of where the muscle and bones are, that they're just cutting things off left and right, and they're not realizing who the valuable people are always. And so they'll let go of people who they shouldn't and keep people they shouldn't. And sometimes it's bureaucracy. Sometimes it's like this person's that person's friend. Even though these two people do more work than that person, but you know, the awareness is not there in that front. So that someone vouches for the wrong person. And I think that is a whole other problem, but it's generally what's happening is they're just trying to cut off, you know, as much cost as they can and being like, hey, how can we make this with what we need, just with the minimal of what we need, right? In order to make sure that we hit profit for that next year.
Yeah, it's always profit in my
experience. It's always money.
Yeah, always money, yeah.
And, you know, that's why I always tell people, I think there's a lot of people who go through this depression after they get laid off because they feel like, I'm not good enough. I didn't do enough work. I'm never going to get a job again because this happened to me. There's people who get in that mindset. Like, they just can't get out of it. And, you know, depression is a very serious thing. Please get therapy. But I think that the other side of it is that I wish people didn't come out of it with that mindset, because it literally is not you. It's not you, it's them problem. They are just, they're not, you know, they're cutting people off because of some money situation, not because you're not good enough.
You could literally be the best person at your job.
Those people back on. They will literally put that position back up. You apply and you're back at the company. They just needed for that 4 months to not be paying for that position.
That's great. Oh, I hate that.
Yeah.
That gives me shivers in a bad way.
Especially. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Liv.
No, Jeremy, you go ahead, because I was going to ask a different question.
I was just going to say, especially for an industry that is so, I'm sure, is so driven by passion. Like, these companies don't, I suspect that the vast majority of video game companies were not started cynically because somebody was like, hey, yeah, let's exploit people. But they were started by people who genuinely loved creating games. I imagine the majority of people who go to work at these places are people who, like you, who grew up playing video games, who, as you said, for so many kids who are playing video games, it's a dream to get to make the games. And so if you are getting to work at a company that makes the games that you love, I imagine that is a dream come true for a huge, like a disproportionate number of the employees at game companies versus other
I would
industries.
Say that a lot of the people who are of that mindset are the minion level. We are the people who are the worker bees. Mm-hmm. We're not the queen, right? I think the people at the top, in my experience, a lot of them sometimes are not as aware and are not playing games on a daily basis. Mm. Or I've had bosses who literally do not play games, who try to talk like they do, and you're like, you really have no idea what you're talking about. And it is very, very clear. And I think it kind of depends on the position that those people are in. Mm. But I have seen a lot of people in senior positions not be gamers and be working to create a product for gamers. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's definitely something that's happening currently right now. I'm working for Repop with Dicebreaker. And they are selling the company, selling Gamer Network, which is the part of the network that I'm a part of. And we're just praying, just like, oh, what if we got like, what if we were bought by someone who understood tabletop and like video games? What if that happened? You know, just like that would be such a
huge boom. Tabletop space is its own, you know, thing where it's a lot harder to make money off that space. And I think anybody who has created a tabletop game can vouch for that. It is hard. I think that with Kickstarters, that has made things a little bit easier. I think that type of money funding has helped a lot of people be able to not just create games in general, but definitely tabletop games. But yeah, it is. It's not easy.
But Margaret, I'm going to move on to like maybe a slightly lighter topic. But you've made a tabletop game, right? Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, it's called Witches and Spellcraft. And I'm actually working on an advanced version of it. But the original product is it's very much like Mad Libs and D&D Had a Baby type of situation. The goal was to create something simple. I had a few friends who are some lady friends who think what I do is weird. They were like, it sounds interesting. I don't know if that's for me. It sounds complicated, like D&D stuff or like Pathfinder or things like that seem to overwhelm them for the idea. And these girls love witches, like love all the witchy stuff that comes with that thing. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make and they like books and reading. So I tried to kind of bring those loves together. And I created a game where it's, you know, you fill in the blank type of thing as a group. You have nouns and verbs and adjectives, adverbs. And it's kind of very much like if you have a group of friends who love books and words and things like that, and they're maybe not into tabletop, but this is kind of the gateway, you know, and now some of them play like a ton. They like, one of the girls is in like a D&D game every week, that she's been part of for like 3 years now. But she just didn't realize that, you know, you could have fun getting into a character and creating a world together. And it's very much a collaborative thing where amazing. You play witches together in a witch school.
I love a witchy setup. I was just looking it up just then to like look at.
And you can get it for free. It's Drive-Thru RPG and it is downloadable and you can pay what you want. So if you would like to give me some money to put towards the next advanced version. And I think the only negatives that I've gotten for reviews are people who are like, this is too simple. I'm like, the whole point is that it's supposed to be simple.
Yeah.
And then,
that's,
you know,
valid approach to RPG making. Yeah.
Yeah. The next version that I'm working on is a little bit more complicated, but I think it'll be fun.
I am just looking at the Drive-Thru RPG thing. I'm going to say that you should check it out as well because I looked down at the artist and it's my friend Newt. That's wild.
Nice.
Their art is amazing. I was looking for an artist who really fit the vibe that I was looking for and they killed it.
Yeah. Like if you haven't heard of Newt, you should check out their stuff and you should check out this game because it looks really cool. I love witchy. I love witchy RPGs. Like give me a witchy RPG any day.
Yeah. Can you say the
How'd
title?
How'd you find
again?
Like? Oh yeah, go for it.
Witches and Spellcraft.
All right, Witches and Spellcraft.
Yeah. How did you find that process of making an RPG? Like, you know, because obviously you love playing them, but like that process of going from playing to like making and writing. How was that for you?
Well, I've already made a bunch of games at that point. So mm-hmm. video games that are much more complicated. So it's mm-hmm. actually pretty simple in my mind to create it. But I just kept trying to simplify it because I kept overcomplicating it. And then I kept trying to dwindle it down to something simple that I could easily explain to somebody and do a game in like an hour, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like you can create your character, create the world, play a game in an hour type of situation. So I was really trying to make it that simple. And yeah, I think hopefully I have succeeded at it. I've seen other people playing it, enjoying it, and using it as a tool to create worlds and characters. And yeah.
Mm. Very cool. And if you want to check out new stuff, they are at Eye of the New on Twitter. So, you know, very good. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Before we get to our final question, I yeah. would be remiss if I did not ask about Roll For It. We've mentioned it. Mm. I've actually shouted it out numerous times. Y'all have heard me flapping my gums talking about Project Piranha, which if you haven't yeah. watched it, you should.
So good.
It's really good. Mm. It's
so good. I yeah. want it to be like a TV series.
It's really
like, it
good.
Should be a Netflix show. Like, I feel like it was so good. And I know I'm biased because I was in it, but I was just like, it was so good from beginning to end. Like, yeah. I could see that being like a TV series. Like,
yeah.
I'm envisioning it in my mind.
Yeah.
I'm just wild.
Like, I genuinely think, like, the character arcs and the character relationships ended up becoming so strong that you could do, like, Legend of Vox Machina-style adaptation, like, and condense some cool. aspects of it and just, like, because there's a lot. Like, the last few, especially the back half of the season. It's
was
just,
intense.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I've talked about it before. Can you tell us a little bit about the birth of Roll For It as like a channel and what it is and maybe some of the shows that you have? And then we can gush for a little bit longer about
Yes, please do.
Yeah. I wasn't at the start of Roll For It. So Roll For It was put together by a group of YouTubers who really enjoyed tabletop together. I think they were playing like Warhammer together or Pathfinder or something like that early on. I joined later when they were playing Shadowrun, and I joined as like just a guest character at the time, and then I started playing with them more often. And then at some point, there were people who decided, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. And so they kind of left, and I offered to help kind of be part of the admin team. And from there, we did a lot of things. We ended up getting a lot of funding through Patreon back before COVID. We started running a lot of different shows, and our goal was to really just tell stories. I think that, you know, there's a lot of shows where they're playing games. We cared less about the game and more about telling stories and utilizing yeah. these systems to tell stories. And so we tried a lot of different systems, from Buffy the Vampire Slayer to Mask to D&D, Pathfinder, like a variety of systems and spaces. And I think we've talked about a few other ones here too. So I think, like, for us, it was really just about trying different things and telling different stories and a wide variety of stories, and not really being a niche for anything in particular, other than really good in-depth characters and worlds. Like, that's really what we were driving. And when we're putting together cast, really trying to find people who are going to have good chemistry together and bring a diverse group of characters together. Because if you bring four people who have the same personality, who are like the same people, they will get along. You'll have fun. You'll laugh. You'll have a great show. But will it be a show where you have four really distinct characters? Maybe not. You might have four characters who are very similar, which is not always a bad thing. Sometimes that's a good show too, or a good story to tell. But really our goal is just to find the right people to put together to really tell just crazy stories. And I feel like every show I'm on, I'm like, I love this.
Well, you got Jeremy in, so that's good casting right there. So,
so yeah, what are some of the shows that you're currently airing on Roll For It?
So we took a little bit of a hiatus. So some people are probably like, what is Roll For It doing? We are currently planning 2 to 3 other shows. They're all in the planning phases. We're trying to make sure that we're in a good space. Bentham and I aren't trying to rush ourselves. Some of them are in art creation now. Some are still in character world creation, and others are in like a proposal phase. So I can't really share anything because they're all under NDA right now, but we will be doing a bunch of shows coming up. We have like so many that people have sent us for proposals that we've approved going into the next year. So we're going to try to get ahead of some of those so that we don't have downtimes like this. Is mostly because my wedding situation and then some things that Bentham's going through as well. So, you know, life sometimes happens and we've been going at it for like nonstop for many, many years. So taking a couple months off, we hope that people will understand, but you never know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You've got to take a break sometimes. It's human nature.
Yeah. And I mean, from what I've seen of the Roll For It fandom, it seems like you have a lot of very loyal fans. So I have faith.
We'll see.
So can you tell us a little bit, just because I really want to plug Project Marana again, how can you tell us about your character, or indeed characters, on that series?
Yeah. So we knew coming into that show that we were going to play characters in the 1990s and then 20 years later in the 2020s. So it was kind of one of those things where I knew everyone else kind of had like an idea of what their characters were going to be like when they were younger and older. And I was like, wouldn't it be cool if I was like a parent and then a child later? And I had talked to Char. Char and I always love like bouncing off of each other. And I was like, what if I was your kid and your husband? And like, we were both super into it. So I think that kind of just worked out really well, and it was a lot of fun. And kind of playing two very different characters was cool, because you have like this guy who's more charismatic, who has like, you know, a caring heart and kind of will step in and, you know, try to help and take, you know, try not to, you know, always the person who's going to be there for you and help you, and like the friend that you're like, if you're thinking of a person, you're like, that's the guy who who I will rely on always. And then playing another character who's really uncomfortable with themselves. They are not, you know, they don't feel comfortable in their own skin. They are, you know, not, they've grown up in a certain way that made them feel like they weren't the right person, right? And not, they always wanted to be something else, but wasn't sure what to do because their mother was always in the limelight. And they felt like they had to be a certain way, and they didn't really have a family because their, you know, their father died from cancer, and then their mother's kind of like off on these book tours and just really shy, uncomfortable, weird person who is super intelligent. And I think like it's just such a fun, you know, drastic contrast to play.
Yeah, and you do, I think you do a fantastic job, because they are two completely different people, and both very, I think both very engaging and likable in their own ways. And
some extent, I think.
And hopefully. Then, well, and then the fates that befall them both are also quite different, and both very memorable. Gosh. But yeah, y'all should listen to Project Marana. It's really good.
Go listen, gang.
It's all on YouTube.
It was a very, very fun series to be part of. Yeah. Highly recommend it. As much as we would love to do like a second, I don't know if another, you know, I don't know if the story should, I feel like maybe the story should just end there, you know?
Yeah. I don't even know where you go from there. It would have to literally literally just be, well, I'm not going to say, it would have to be very,
I was like, we don't want to give it away. I have an idea of how you could do the second, but it would end with, it would have to be because this is super, not descriptive, but Jeremy will know what I'm saying. It would have to do with basically a recycle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which actually could be pretty cool. That could be cool. Kelly on the horn.
I know Kelly's plotting some other stuff and is going to be sending some proposals. I hope they come up with another thriller, because I'm a huge fan of like creepy thriller stuff, because it's hard to find a group of people who are down with just like, do everything. Because there's so many people who have like this list of like, I don't want this, I don't want that. And that's okay. You should come to the table comfortably. I think that having those tools to be like, you know, X and O cards, and coming to the table with like what people, what veils and lines people have are very important. But I love when I come to a table and everyone's like, no lines, no veils, let's go. Because you could just explore so much depth with characters, and as long as you can do it in a respectful manner, I think that we were all respectful in the way that we were doing stuff, even though like there was some dark shit in there. I think that that's always fun.
Yeah.
And this is Call of Cthulhu, right?
Yeah. It's Call of Cthulhu. Yeah. And Cthulhu does call, let me tell you.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, he's always calling.
Yeah. what's interesting is I think some of the most horrifying moments of that series were not even supernatural. It was just things that people were doing. It was like, oh, my Lord.
It was like going to school. Oh, God. failing college courses.
Terrible
having to
landlord.
Deal with your angry parent, yeah, like exactly. That kind of shit. Yeah,
family drama. Unspoken love. All yeah, just it was rough stuff. And then power tools. But anyway, yeah,
The power tools were horrifying.
it gets.
Dang, I
it
feel
gets,
like we should check this out.
You should check it out. It's good.
I would love to.
It's good stuff. But okay. Heads up, it does get gory. Especially in the back half.
I can
half.
Deal with that.
Yeah. So
I can deal with that. It's fine.
Margaret, thank you so much for your time. This has been great. Before we go, we have to ask you, we always ask all of our guests for a tale from the table. This is a story of a memorable experience that you had playing TTRPGs. There's no stipulations as to emotional tone. It can be triumphant. It can be tragic. It can be exhilarating. It can be terrifying. It could be hilarious. Something that you, an experience that you had either as a GM or player that was particularly memorable playing TTRPGs.
It could be from Project Morana, if you want to.
It could be.
Big Trouble Little Man Loose.
If you've got something that doesn't spoil too much, I guess.
There's that, yeah.
Ooh. That's hard. I have so many good memories in so many games.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
I think I'm going to bring up the Good Society one from Eaton Grange again, because I look very fondly at that show. Primarily because it was very, there's like no dice rolling. It is so much about the story and the characters, and everyone has like, you know, their motivations in life and the things that they're aspiring to do, and just the daily lives of some of these folks who are like, oh, woe is me, when all they have to do is like drink tea, you know? It's so interesting to play characters like that. But especially when it comes to things where love is involved, I think can be very hard, or like family is involved. And in this case, the show ends with a sad ending. And I think that a lot of the games that I played in end with a very happy ending. And this one was, we were all in tears. Just, we all knew what was coming, and the viewers did not, but we did. We had all agreed what was going to happen in the end, because it was kind of a big deal, and it was not something we had planned for until literally the last episode. And so because of how big and impactful it was going to be, and because that made basically the last episode be such a sad, sad thing, it was very cool to see everybody just be like, yeah, I'm in. Let's do this. Let's go for this dark, sad ending. And just how much emotion was brought into everybody, like through their characters. And then post, we were just like, okay, me trying to do the outro for that show was so hard. Cause I was like, I had to like breathe and get myself together. Cause it was just so sad. Just like, I can't spoil it too much, but it is just, you're not expecting it. And it, especially with a show like that.
Where can people watch this again?
It is on Roll For It. YouTube.com/roll4.
And what's the title of that series?
Eaton Grange.
Okay, cool. I will jump on and say that Good Society is so much fun. I played it with RP Geeks recently. And in terms of what you were saying about love for the character, I was playing a character who was trapped in an unhappy marriage. But because she realized, she figured out that she wasn't straight. And so she like really like liked the stable woman or whatever. And so, but what was amazing was that me and our GM, Ed Spence, who is phenomenal, by the way, our characters just sat down and spoke openly about it. But it was like so moving. And I was like crying real tears. And it's like, oh my God, what is happening? maybe I should just go fight
when
a dragon.
When you're driven... Like- when you're playing like a character and you're driven to tears,
Yeah.
It is a depth that you just will never forget. And yeah, it is hard. And you're like, what is happening? This is fake. Yeah. This is not real life. Why am I so emotional? I think that goes to show that, like, maybe in that scene that you were in, that the two of you were that enveloped in it, that, like, you really felt your characters. And I know that was for us, for that cast. Like, we felt it in our souls. Like, we were like, these are real people. These people have lives. It's kind of like the Project Morana. It's like, it feels like they're real people. And I think that even though we know that they're fake, they're not us, they're not our characters. Or they're not, you know, us as people. They're these other characters that we've made up. They just feel so real. And I think when you have those type of moments in games, it is just something to cherish.
Absolutely. I will say, Jeremy, we should play Good Society on this channel, on the podcast. Oh my god, yes. Oh my god, Jeremy, yes. Oh my god, it's happening.
I'm putting it in the calendar. I don't know where, but I'm writing it down
somewhere. Margaret, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a wonderful chat. Can you please tell the lovely listeners where they can find you? Plug anything you got.
I'm Margaret Crone. I'm pretty easy to find. You can find me at Margaret Crone in all of the places, except for TikTok. I'm Margaret Crone 1337 because someone has my name and they won't give it to me. They're not even using it, so I don't know. But yeah, I do lots of things on the internet. I let people know what's up through those spaces. And I make games and video games for a living. I'm currently working on a project called Ashes of Creation, and you can find it at Ashes of Creation in all the spaces.
All right.
Heck yeah. Very cool. Jeremy, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Jeremy Cobb 1. That's Cobb with 2 B's and the number 1. You can find me on Instagram at The Cobbmeister. And you can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/casualquestlive, where I stream as someone who is not a gamer. It's me playing classic games for the first time. So as of this recording, I just recently started Disco Elysium, which I have. That's the only one that I've actually played before that we've done on the
channel. That's your fave.
Yeah. But we also, we've been doing Baldur's Gate 3. We're going to be starting Metal Gear Solid 2 pretty soon.
BG3 so good.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
I've never played any of the Metal Gear games. So Metal Gear Solid.
Metal Gear's fun too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I played Metal Gear Solid. That was one of the first games that we did and it was great. We've done Lethal Company recently. Yeah, we have a whole long list of stuff. So go check that out.
Oh, there's so many games. If you have not played games, you're going to be playing games till you're in a, not be able to walk anymore.
Get up there.
Yeah. Till
can't see.
Till the technology has gone so far that we no longer have controllers and it's all like Neuralink stuff.
Oh yeah, you just get into like a pod and then you're like.
Exactly. And you can like split your consciousness where part of you is doing actual tasks and the rest of you is just playing games.
Love that.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
So the ideal future. Anyway, that's it for me.
Sorry, that was really funny. It made me choke. Hi, I'm Liv. You can check me out on like Twitter and on most things. I'm at Does Dark Magic. Unless I'm Olivia Does Dark Magic. That's the only difference. But also, you should check out Three Black Halflings. That's us. This is the podcast you're currently listening to. We have a website and it's threeblackhalflings.com. We have a Patreon, which you should go and check out. Look, gang, all I'm saying is that we've been on our game and the Patreon's popping off, okay?
There've been polls.
There've been bonus episodes. Me and Jeremy talk about our trip to Manchester, which we went up and we saw Jasper and we did like a bunch of cool stuff. If you want to know what we did, you should go and check out the Patreon. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And if you want to know my true feelings on the domestication of cats, you can also, that's also in that episode.
It's in there. It's such a wild like veering off, just like, oh, we're talking about that. Okay, cool. I'm interested though. Yeah.
True. I don't know how we got on that I think were we talking about Biscuit? Really, is that what it was?
Probably. I'm always talking about Biscuit, who is my dog, by the way, Margaret.
Okay. That's, I was like, I don't know where you go from biscuits to cats, but okay.
Yeah, there's kind of a link. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, we've done that. We did a little. We posted the one shot we did. We did a little one shot with our friend Andrew from Newsbeat because we were talking to the BBC the other week. It was a whole thing. We took Andrew through the world of Utarum, which is the Outlaws and Obelisks world. And you should if you want to hear some Outlaws and Obelisks, where I play a gerbolg, which is a giraffe furball, you should go and take a little look.
It's delightful.
Sounds like an awesome character. I'm so into it.
Yeah,
she turned real wild.
Dude, giraffes are wild. They just like swing their necks around and beat each other's asses. I'm just like, what?
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. That's though. So oh my metal. God. Yeah. Oh, her weapon should be her neck. Why don't we think true. Of that?
She should just whack people with her neck and head. Just
whacking people.
What ended up happening a lot of times is that her head would arrive somewhere while her body was doing something else.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Her body would be like 10 feet away and her head would join a conversation. And then her body would like walk over partway through and like join her head.
Uh-huh. And she was a cleric, and so she had like her Bible, which was also a gun. It was a whole thing. You should go.
It was good.
It was good. It was fun stuff. That's patreon.com/3blackhalflings. It's the number 3blackhalflings. And you can find us with that name on Twitter and all the social media things. Anything else for me? Oh, we've got a live show 5th of April.
Yeah.
Come to London.
Yes.
Go see us live. It'll be fun. We're gonna hang. It's gonna be great. Lots of fun times. I think that's about it, right, Jeremy?
I think it is.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you again, Margaret, for chatting with us.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Excellent stuff. All right. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk. I like saying it like we're discovering something. Like, oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay.
Like,
so
Margaret,
long.
You can say it, too, if you want to discover it.
So Shire, long, Shire folk.
Hey!
Nice. So that's how you should say it.
Yes.
Like, oh, my God, what?
You said it the correct way.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.